From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Brandy McDonald, entertainment writer for the Oklahoman and News OK. I'm here with my colleague George Lang, and we're doing our weekly entertainment podcast. As usual, we're talking about movies. And George is going to talk to us about Pink Panther 2.
Yeah.
Whether we all like it or not.
Oh, actually, it should be
really funny since I didn't have to see it.
Sometimes we really earn our keep around here. Okay, so Pink Panther 2. I saw the original remake in 2006.
Which means you've been drawing all the short straws.
I've been drawing the short straws. This is a really depressing film. All right.
Which is funny from a comedy.
And what's depressing about it is that, A, you don't need this movie. You didn't need the one in 2006 either. There are some perfectly good Peter Sellers comedies that were made in the 60s and 70s surrounding Inspector Clouseau and the hunt for this this giant pink diamond known as the Pink Panther. But because the studio needs to make fresh money, they're making these horribly limp, uninspired, just wrote by the numbers slapstick comedy starring Steve Martin as Inspector Clouseau, and this time out he brings a lot of his incredibly talented friends along for the ride, and which makes it even more depressing because there's some great talent on display doing absolutely nothing but cashing checks. Okay?
I think you said top to bottom, everybody, including Steve Martin, could do better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, in this iteration, it doesn't really matter, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Giant diamond known as the Pink Panther, along with several other antiquities, including the Shroud of Turin and other artifacts, are stolen by an evil mastermind, of course. And it's up to Clouseau and an international band of crime fighters who are led by Andy Garcia and Alfred Molina and Bollywood superstar Aishwarya Rai. They're assisting Clouseau, the bumbling French inspector, in finding this artifacts or antiquities. And so, but that's just a setup. And all it is a series of face plants. It's Steve Martin doing what was done so much better by Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, and especially Peter Sellers. Alan Arkin did a better job as Inspector Clouseau in that one iteration that Peter Sellers didn't sign on for. What you see here is a parade of really good talent coming in and clocking in and clocking out. Lily Tomlin is there. Emily Mortimer, Jean Reno, Garcia, Molina, John Cleese. Let me tell you about John Cleese, okay?
I feel like this is so depressing that we should have a couch in here
You can be writing in your notebook. Interesting, mm-hmm. interesting.
Tell me how you feel about that, George.
John Cleese is playing the role that Kevin Kline played in the 2006 version, Chief Inspector Dreyfus. Kevin Kline, when he does his comedy routines, he always has a mustache, and he's always he's got the funny accent and all this Fish Called Wanda material. But he was doing his French accent. Well, Cleese steps in, and you think, wow, okay, John Cleese, the man who is the chief architect of the funniest French accent in the history of cinema.
I'm French. Why do you think I have this outrageous accent?
I wag my private parts at your aunties, if you can say that kind of thing on a family program.
And I didn't know this was a family program, so go ahead.
Who knows? At any rate, he plays it straight. He does a British accent. He doesn't care. Neither does the director. The director, Harold Zwart, who I believe is Dutch, they either don't know or simply don't care that John Cleese is the absolute master, and they just let it slide. They let the whole operation slide. You know, Aishwarya,
so he's playing a Frenchman who does not use, and he does not in a comedy, and does not use the Monty Python accent.
He is stunningly unfunny, which is a horrible thing to say about John Cleese, but it's true. And really, there aren't any laughs. I mean, there are a couple of moments where you go, oh yeah, you know. But there's just nothing there, and I actually as the credits were rolling at this advanced screening, somebody actually yelled a nastiness at the screen. You know, people never do that.
Right.
It's free entertainment. Hey,
free movie.
Free
night
movie.
Away from the kids.
That's right.
I don't care.
But there was some anger there. You know, but there were also people laughing. There's probably a segment of the population that will laugh uproariously at this, and it'll probably make a ton of money overseas because there's no real script to speak of. So it's all visuals. It's the international language of bad comedy. Did I not like this?
You didn't like it. I've listened very carefully to what
okay.
you said, and I've determined no.
Aishwarya Rai, who was really pretty great in Pride and Prejudice, which was a little dodgy, but I liked her performance in this. She is given absolutely nothing to do in this. She's basically a bauble. It's just like how they used Beyoncé Knowles, who recently proved that she can act.
Right.
You know, in Cadillac Records and in Dreamgirls, arguably. You know, she was absolutely horrible in Pink Panther. So they're not even, they don't even bother to write parts for a lot of these people. It's just, come in, you know, and deliver your lines and go away. Jeremy Irons. Oh, Jeremy Irons, why are you
in this movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is a real shame. And Martin co-wrote it, so he takes more of the blame than I would otherwise give him. And I'm a big Martin fan. He's written some great comedies, some great dramas for that matter. And he just whiffs this in a major way. So don't go see this. Don't go see The Pink Panther 2. Don't go to it.
And if you go to it, don't say George didn't warn you.
Yeah.
Because he says, no, sir.
That's right.
So.
That's right. Let's move on to something somewhat better.
Somewhat better. I went to see He's Just Not That Into You, which it's based on the very funny and brutally honest best-selling self-help book. Is from Greg Barrington, Liz Tuchilla, who she was one of the writers on Sex and the City, and he mm-hmm. was a consultant on Sex
right.
and the City.
And Barrington's a good stand-up.
Right, Barrington is a good stand-up.
Very funny.
And the book is, I had never read it before, and my sister-in-law had it, and she loaned it to me whenever I found out I was going to do this movie, and I became like an instant fan. If you are a single woman, you need to read this book and keep it next to your bedside, because it basically, he's just not that into you. It's not meant to be an insult. It's this idea of, basically, the theme is if he's not calling you, if he's not dating mm-hmm. you, if he's sleeping with someone else, he's not that into you. Stop what you're doing and go find somebody else who is into you.
It's
don't sort of waste your time on crappy relationships.
Right, sort of the antithesis of most self-help books.
Right.
And it's something that actually plays shoots straight.
Right. And so I became like an instant fan of this, but when I read it, I thought, how in the world are you going to make this into a narrative? Because it's not a story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of a advice book.
Right.
So I was really surprised that it was as faithful and effective as it is in the film version. It was directed by Ken Kwapis, who did Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, which mm-hmm. is a good thing because this has nine storylines to
wow.
it. So you're talking a huge ensemble, a huge star-studded ensemble. We're talking Drew Barrymore, Jennifer Aniston, Jennifer Goodwin, who's wonderful, Scarlett Johansson,
right.
Ben Affleck, Justin Long, and so it really is, it's a great cast. It's a well-used cast because some of the smaller parts actually go to some of the bigger stars. The core story is played by Jennifer Goodwin, who's absolutely charming, Justin mm-hmm. Long, who's hilarious, but they let these people have kind of the heart of it, even though they're not the big-name stars, so there's some good judgment being used here, but basically it takes this group of 20 and 30 somethings in Baltimore, and they're all kind of sort of interconnected. One of them is buddies with another who's kind of dating this guy or went out with this guy once and things like that. So they're not, it's not one of those coincidental, like, oh, isn't it funny how they all were turned out to be best friends at the end, you know, or something mm-hmm. like that. But it's sort of like kind of how you know people who know people kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
And it basically takes these people, it's kind of a winding thing, but it takes them through all of these storylines about different people who are in different stages of dating, relationships, romance, marriage, and kind of deals with some pretty common issues related to it. You know, you've got Jennifer Goodwin, who's so great in it as this sort of hopeless romantic named Gigi, who is just almost desperately pushy. You know, she so desperately wants to find Mr. Right, and it kind of gets started whenever she and Connor, who's played by Kevin Connolly, go out on this blind date, and she races home to wait for his phone call, and he calls somebody, but he doesn't call her. He calls Anna, who's played by Scarlett Johansson, who's, you know, a one-time hookup who kind of keeps him on the hook, and then it kind of spans out from there. You've got Ben Affleck and Jennifer Aniston, who play a couple who've been together for 7 years. He doesn't want to get married because he doesn't believe in marriage, and she desperately wants to get married, and how they resolve that. And so it really is kind of the all these interesting. I mean, there, if you've been in a relationship at all, it's got something in there that you can relate to, and that's the kind of the great part about it, is that despite the fact that all of these people are too wealthy, too beautiful, and too young, which is pretty common in romantic sort of movies, it actually really is kind of relatable. Not everything works out in the Hollywood, you know, ending sort of way, although there is some Hollywood rules that are followed. It does follow some of the advice from the book, though, you know, in that it doesn't try to force things where there isn't things. So it really does manage to convey some of what I thought was really good about the book, some of the humor. But it just seems to have more substance than a lot of the sort of romantic comedies. It's almost more of like an ensemble dramedy, because some of what it gets into really isn't funny. But it's kind of handled in kind of a funny kind of way. Yeah. But it has a lot more substance than your Bride Wars or something like that. That's pretty light and lightweight. And you know, as Drew Barrymore, I did an interview with her, she kind of put it, she goes, it's not some guy narrowly missing some woman who's supposed to be his meant-to-be at the airport, and nobody is a prince, and, you know, so it's not dealing with unrealistic situations. So I thought, in that sense, it was really good. It does avoid some of the more odious rom-com cliches. If I never see another makeover montage, I would be a happy woman. This has no makeover montage. Nobody sings into a hairbrush.
And nobody sings into a hairbrush.
No.
There's no sing along to a Motown oldie in the kitchen.
No.
Okay, good.
And actually, on iTunes, there's this funny little comedy bit that Justin Long and Kevin Connolly have done about the 10 rom-com cliches that aren't in the movie, because they were very cognizant of not wanting to have those here. And so it actually avoids some of those things. Like I said, there are some Hollywood happy endings to it, but you do get a lot of the good meat out of the book, and it is, you know, it's just kind of interesting. It really moves fairly smoothly between all of these interwoven storylines, and you really feel like you can relate to what at least some of the characters are going through, and there's just a little more depth to it than a lot of rom-coms. So I gave it 3 stars. I was surprised at how well they were able to adapt something that really didn't seem like it was necessarily meant to be a movie.
You know, and you're talking about Jennifer Goodwin. I watch her like every week right now as Margene on Big Love on HBO, and she's a scene stealer on that show. She's one of the she's one of the best things about a show that's filled with really great actors. And I hope this movie goes a long way to, you know, to giving her more exposure, because she's very, very talented, very funny, just a very natural kind of screen presence. So
and I like Justin Long a lot, and he's somebody who he's probably best known for playing the straight guy in the Mac PC commercials.
Right.
You know, he kind of gets the straight man job of that. Well, in this, he sort of speaks as the voice of the book. He sort of befriends Gigi, because he turns out to be a buddy of Connor's, who basically gives her this straight sort of reality check. He's not interested. Kind of thing. And so he plays that sort of burnt character, you know, the voice of the book.
Right.
Who, and he's a good enough guy, and he's funny enough that he can kind of say, he's just not that into you, without it seeming like he's trying to put you down. So I thought he was great. I thought Jennifer Goodwin was great. Of course, the rest of the cast is pretty stellar and doing good work.
Excellent, excellent.
So, good choice.
You mentioned Justin Long being one half of the Mac PC thing. You know, the other half is represented in my film, next one, Coraline, which is the latest movie by Henry Selick. Now, a lot of people might know Henry Selick's name from having directed Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas and James and the Giant Peach. And then in 2001, he directed a movie called Monkey Bone, which almost completely scuttled his career. Right. It was the studio stepped in, told this man who specializes in stop motion animation, the sort of artisan like animation process that Willis O'Brien pioneered with King Kong, and then Ray Harryhausen did with with Jason and the Argonauts and Clash of the Titans and all those films. This man is a really distinctive director, but they imposed some live action on him. It ended up just being a highly compromised movie, and it nearly destroyed his career. Well, 8 years later, he's back, having done some work with this animation studio called Laika, which was founded by Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, and it's pretty amazing stuff because this is an entirely uncompromised movie, and it's based on Neil Gaiman's sort of tweens horror novel about.
We should probably say it's called Coraline.
Coraline. I'm very sorry.
It's okay.
I'm just getting all into it.
Coraline.
And it centers on Coraline Jones, who's voiced by Dakota Fanning, who we'll talk more about later, who's a bored preteen, moves into a dilapidated mansion with her parents, who are voiced by Terry Hatcher and John Hodgman, who's the PC in the Mac PC ads. And they're a couple of garden writers. They write about gardening, and they're miserable, they're overworked, and they don't have time for Coraline, who has a nose for adventure, and she's just kind of smarting under this drab existence that her parents impose on her. So she's looking for something to spice up this drab life, and while she's snooping around the house, she discovers a small door behind some tattered wallpaper. She goes through this door, and it's this parallel universe, it's like a rabbit hole into a Lewis Carroll type situation with an other mother and an other father, and these are idealized parents, the great parents, the parents that make sumptuous meals for at dinner time and play music on their during their downtime and are sparkling conversationalists, and everything's wonderful, and she thinks that she wants to live there. I might make the distinction that the other mother and other father have buttons for eyes.
Buttons for eyes, right.
Okay.
I've seen
that. Well, things look great for Coraline. She wants to live there. Well, she can only do it under one condition, and the other mother lets her know that she has to sew some buttons over her eyes if she wants to live there. Okay, well, that's a bad sign, right? There are many other bad signs, and the dream world quickly turns into this macabre nightmare as Coraline discovers that her parents are trapped in this other dimension and might not survive if she continues along this road. But I have to say, this is a really just amazing film to watch. I love stop motion animation, and it's just nice to be able to see something that where you can. The way Selleck described it to me when I interviewed him is that you can see the artist's hand.
Right.
And that's not something that we see in CG very much.
Right, exactly.
It's a very smooth process in CG. Whereas this is puppetry. And it's puppetry on a massive scale. Just some amazing work being done here, and it is dark. As I've talked before. I mean, this is some seriously dark stuff. It's not
this is
for
not little,
little kids.
Kids. Right.
Definitely not for little kids, unless you just want to scar them. And I don't think you want to do that. This is for preteens that have sort of a taste for menace, because it's definitely here and artfully done. So I highly recommend that people with a certain taste for this kind of stuff, Neil Gaiman fans, fans of Henry Selleck, because if you loved A Nightmare Before Christmas, I think you're going to love Coraline quite a bit.
And I love James and the Giant Peach.
Yes,
I actually
I
like
too.
It better than Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite sort of adaptations.
That was a Roald Dahl,
right?
Yeah.
Roald Dahl, great mm-hmm. book,
right?
You know, and one of the a great adaptation. And James and the Giant Peach does have that sort of element of menace, but it's not as dark. It's a little more for a younger crowd. And so, if you want. If Coraline looks interesting to your kids and they're mm-hmm. too young to handle something that's written by Neil Gaiman that's a little too scary, James and the Giant Peach might make a great, project this weekend to rent it and watch it.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
It's one of those things that, I missed him so much after he was... sort of
banished.
Exiled.
He said that he was sent to director prison, which is what happens when when you make a film that doesn't make a lot of money. And that was a movie that I believe had a $75 million budget, and it made like.
Eight million
back. So when that happens, they send you away. You're not wanted. But enough people were great fans of this guy's work who knew he didn't deserve that.
Right.
And he needed to come back, and I'm glad he is back, and hopefully he'll be delivering a lot more that's on the level of Coraline and his previous films.
Well, we're going to end up with a Wire review of the movie Push, which was not screened in Oklahoma City. We wagged the finger of shame at them, although it might be noted that, according to Orlando Sentinel reviewer Roger Moore, that if you really don't like somebody, you might take them to a double feature of Push and Pink Panther 2. He's not a fan. Let's put it this way. He's not a fan. But he does note that Dakota Fanning does her first drunk scene. And Push, if that's of any interest.
She's breaking ground all over the place.
She's breaking ground everywhere. So. But he basically says this is a comic book inspired thriller about mind readers and mind benders and people who have telekinetic powers that were given to them by the government in a demented effort to create these walking, talking weapons out of people. Mm. Which is kind of something we've heard before, but he says it's a really overly ambitious attempt to shove a fairly complex comic book universe into one movie.
Right.
Kind of, so to speak.
And probably a 90-minute one, too, right?
And this is one of, I believe this is a Summit Entertainment, which you might say some of the same things about Twilight if you were a fan, looking at some of the kitschy special effects in it and not up-to-par makeup. They sort of specialize in moderately budgeted movies, and not everything necessarily mm-hmm. works on a moderate budget. But
right.
But basically, Dakota Fanning plays Cassie. She's a 13-year-old who is called a watcher, somebody who can see the future and sketch it out on her notepad. Her mom told her that she would see clearer if she had a few belts, so she tipples a little bit, and you see that Fanning is basically trying to ditch the cute kid persona with that. So, Cassie shows up at the door of a mover played by Chris Evans. She travels to Hong Kong to find him, and his dad, who was a watcher, told him to look for her 10 years ago. And there she is in kind of punk mode, and they're ready to bring down the division, the agency that created these sort of special people. There's others that include sniffs who can smell every place you've used an object. Bleeders who scream until you bleed, shifters, wipes, there's all these different types of people who have all these different types of skills.
Wow.
And there are also pushers who can shove a thought into your head, persuade you to kill yourself, alter your memory. One of these people, Kira, who's played by Camilla Bell, has escaped, and she's bringing I haven't seen it, but I swear this is what he wrote, magic syringe. to Hong Kong, where people will die in an effort to shape the future.
Wow.
But the race
Camilla
is on.
Bell in another quality production.
Right.
Go figure.
Basically, the race is on to get Kira and the syringe full of telekinesis juice. That's what he wrote. I haven't seen it. I don't know. That will turn those who take it and survive into super weapons.
I think.
In quotes, agents are on the trail. And also, the division is on the trail.
I have a word for you. Heroes. Heroes.
Heroes.
Yeah, Mondays on NBC. Sounds exactly like
Sounds
Heroes.
Sounds like a ripoff of Heroes. So, but yes, he says Fanning, properly plucky, despite her drunk scene, apparently. Evans makes a passable action hero. It's basically, Bell is all, this is what he wrote, Bell is all bangs and blandness. So, and that basically a lot of, similar to Pink Panther 2, a lot of very talented people are completely and utterly wasted in something that really isn't worth your time. It's basically the long and short of it.
Okay.
So
if you're on a hate jag and you really want to, you know, to give somebody a bad time, yeah,
that double... If you want to prove to your girlfriend that you're just not that into her, take her to see a double feature of this.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So go see Coraline. Go see. He's just not that into you. And the other two. Well, you know what to do. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
That's right.
Don't say we didn't warn you.
That's right. Well, that wraps up another podcast from NewsOK.com and The Oklahoman, telling you exactly what to see this weekend in the movie theaters. I'm George Lang.
I'm Brandi McDonald.
And thanks for downloading us.